We have four related cases this morning. The first is number 20-1871, Sanofi Aventis v. Mylan Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Ansley.
Good morning, Your Honors.
You can take your mask off if you wish.
Thanks. It's a habit by now. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Sutton Ansley, Counsel for Appellants. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. To provide opening marks for all the appeals we'll hear about today, the Board found that 67 of the 69 challenge claims were unpatentable. That's a rejection rate of 97%. As will be discussed today, these sweeping rejections, which were based on prior art that was previously before the Patent Office, was the result of improper hindsight stemming from the Board's misapplication of the law. Under the Court's precedent, these decisions should be reversed or vacated. Now, for Consolidated Appeal Number 20-1871, I plan to discuss and focus on the Steenfeld Jensen ground before turning to the Burroughs ground with the time that I have remaining. For the Steenfeld Jensen ground, what the Board effectively...
These are two alternative grounds, right?
This is correct, Your Honor. And for the Steenfeld Jensen ground, the Board effectively did, what it effectively did is found that a person of skill in the art would have been motivated to make a pen injector worse simply because a POSA could have done so. Here, the question is whether Steenfeld Jensen renders obvious claims reciting an internally threaded driver tube. Now, notably, Steenfeld Jensen discloses 5 separate pin injector embodiments, each having different components and mechanisms for operation. Mylan relies on the 5th embodiment for teaching the challenge claims, but neither the 5th embodiment nor the other 4 embodiments disclose an internally threaded drive sleeve. Nonetheless, the Board found that a teaching specific to the 1st embodiment purportedly suggested putting an internal thread on a driver tube.
So if there's in the prior art reference an express suggestion to combine, and there's no indication that there's a disadvantage in the prior art reference to the combination, you're suggesting that the patentee can come in the IPR and present evidence that there's a disadvantage and that's sufficient?
That's a different case than here because there is no express teaching to modify the 5th embodiment. Again, Mylan's relying on the 5th embodiment for teaching the challenge claims, and the Board found, for example, at Appendix Site 61, that we determined that this express teaching applies directly to the 1st embodiment. So there is no direct express teaching to modify the 5th embodiment. What the Board found is that this teaching could be applied to the 5th embodiment and a person of ordinary skill in the art would consider doing so because of analogous components.
The parts are interchangeable?
For this ground, for the Steenfeld-Jensen ground, Mylan argued and the Board found that a POSA would consider applying the teaching from the 1st embodiment to the 5th, not on interchangeability. The interchangeability reason or rationale was used for the Burroughs ground and then also for claims 30 and 32 with respect to the Steenfeld-Jensen ground. But here, the analogous components rationale...
You challenge the Burroughs grounds in your blue brief?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
In the blue brief, you were charging the Steenfeld-Jensen grounds. Where specifically in your brief were you challenging the Burroughs grounds?
So we challenged that. I believe the analysis begins.
Just maybe give me a cite to the page in the brief.
Certainly, Your Honor. It's the first section of our opening argument. This is from the blue brief at page, begins at page 28, Your Honor.
28?
Yes, sir. And Burroughs specifically at page 29, beginning of the heading, the Board erred in holding that a POSA would have had a reason to modify Burroughs' docile sleeve to have a groove.
So back on the Steenfeld-Jensen, what do you, just to say then what you think the Board did wrong in borrowing for the 5th embodiment some teaching elsewhere in the same prior art, not specifically directed to the 5th embodiment. But when the Board said, we think a skilled artisan would have, in fact, been motivated to borrow that piece from the same document. Is that a fair description, at least? of what you're criticizing, and then
in ways, I think so the board did conclude that a person of skill in the art would be motivated to apply the teaching from the first to the fifth. But what they did is they relied on rationales that only addressed the question of a reasonable expectation of success. They didn't actually identify any incentive, benefit, or anything else that would motivate a person of skill in the art to actually apply this teaching from
Why is that necessary if there's an express teaching?
Because, again, the express teaching here is to a separate embodiment, the first embodiment. As the board found, it's not an express teaching to modify the fifth embodiment. And I should note, too, we take issue with the fact that it is indeed an express teaching.
That's a pretty limited view of express teaching. I don't think our cases have required that kind of specificity. If you have an express teaching to use a particular claim element in the prior art, don't the cases say that's sufficient?
Well, we disagree that it's expressed teaching and that finding is supported by substantial evidence. But even still, this is not a teaching that's applicable to all five embodiments. The board acknowledged, for example, at Appendix Site 62 of the 069 final written decision, for example, that this teaching that is discussed at the end of the first embodiment and the board found applied directly to the first embodiment, that it's not a general teaching that applies to all the embodiments, at least because, as the board acknowledged, it doesn't work for the second embodiment. So the board found that a person of skill in the art, what they'd have to do is determine for each of the embodiments, second, third, fourth, and fifth, which, again, different pens in each of these, whether a teaching in the first could work. So what we're left with is, again, we're asking the question, could a person of ordinary skill in the art take a teaching from the first embodiment and to apply it to the fifth to get it to work? And importantly here, Your Honor, I haven't gotten to this point yet, but importantly, the record shows that the only evidence that goes to a person of ordinary skill in the arts, incentives, or motivations, shows that the pen injector modification would be substantially worse. And the board didn't identify any reason to make a worse pen other than that a POSA could do it because of the analogous parts. That is, because a modification to one set of components in the first embodiment could work in the fifth embodiment. Now the board.
Can I just ask, is it right that it is a factual determination that the board made on page 63 of that it read this piece of prior art as suggesting that the particular component described in the context of the first embodiment, but with slightly broader language, actually would teach a person of skill in the art to use that when enough with sufficiently similar component-wise other embodiments, which would include the fifth. That's the material right in the middle of page 63. And if that's a factual finding, is that really lacking in substantial evidence support?
I think it is, Your Honor. Again, the board did conclude that this is a teaching specific to the first embodiment and that it's not a teaching of general applicability. It doesn't work for the second embodiment.
But there's some distance between those two things. Specific to the first embodiment, general applicability. I take this page to be a finding that it does suggest applicable for sufficiently similar other structures, mm-hmm. of which the fifth embodiment is one.
And see, that gets back to not a reason to modify, but it gets back to an analysis that the POSA has to conduct. Could I do it? Right? Could I apply this teaching from the first to the second to get it to work? The answer is no. Could I apply it to the fifth to get it to work? And the answer is yes. But that is a reasonable expectation of success inquiry. It's actually not a sufficient rationale for a POSA to say I would modify the fifth embodiment in this way, particularly, again, when there's only detriments of the proposed modification against no benefits or reason to actually modify the fifth embodiment in such a manner.
Okay, can I just clarify this? On the assumption, which I'm not going to look at right now, that the board did not recite benefits, did Mylan's evidence purport to recite benefits from borrowing this suggestion from the first embodiment for the fifth?
No, Your Honor. I believe the red brief did say that the modified pen in and of itself is a benefit. That's the first time we've seen that argument. we think that that type of argument sort of undercuts the actual requirement to have a reason to modify a pin. If every new embodiment were a benefit in and of itself, then we wouldn't need to ask the question, what's the reason or benefit for a proposed modification? But to answer your question, no, not the petition didn't allege any benefits for the proposed modification. The board found there were only detriments. I see that I'm coming a little close to my rebuttal time, so I'm going to switch to the Burroughs ground briefly. For the Burroughs ground, one of the disputed claim limitations requires a groove on a dose-style sleeve. Burroughs does not disclose this. It discloses rather threads, a pair of threads on a dial mechanism, which is the purported dose-style sleeve. And Mylan proposed adding a pair of threads to the dial mechanism to satisfy this claim limitation on the rationale that threads and grooves are interchangeable. But the fact that features are interchangeable only gets to the question, could Opposa have made the change?
Well, why is that? So, I guess I've been looking at some of the case law, and I'd like some help from you in thinking about it. So KSR treats, I'm not sure it uses the term interchangeable, but an interchangeability situation, a well-recognized tiny number of alternatives that people would know you could put the buttons on the left side and the buttonholes on the right, or you could flip them. And that's kind of what's going on here, right? And have we really held that in that situation where a skilled artisan would immediately recognize there are two alternatives, that in order for there to be obviousness to choose the worst one, that you needed a reason to go and choose it? Aren't both obvious even if no one would choose the worst one?
So KSR...
Have we ever so held to the contrary, I guess? And I don't mean language and opinions. I mean a holding.
That interchangeability alone is enough?
Yes.
No, Your Honor, not that we're aware
of. No, the other way. I'm sorry. I meant, have we ever said in this situation of tiny number of limited alternatives, every skilled artisan would recognize them, that that we have said, sorry, board, you can't help you. We reverse your obviousness ruling because you didn't have a finding that there was an affirmative benefit from going in that direction.
I see that I'm eating into my rebuttal time.
I'd love an answer anyway.
Okay, every case requires KSR did not remove the requirement to, you have to show a reason for the proposed modification.
KSR did not assert that there always is such a requirement, did it? Doesn't it say something like, it's often useful to have a reason?
Well, I think this court's interpretation of the KSR decision is instructive. In Procter & Gamble, this court held that under KSR, it remains necessary to identify some reason that would have led Opposa to modify the prior art. And I think that's because...
doesn't KSR in the discussion of Secreta say, in this extremely limited situation of well-known interchangeable alternatives, that the POSA has a reason? Doesn't KSR say that in terms? Thereby automatically satisfying that requirement in that small subset of situations?
But see, KSR says more than that, Your Honor. I mean, I think that port... portion of the opinion is at 417. At 418, the court explains that you do need to find a reason for the proposed modification. As this court has held, a reason is critical here, particularly in the predictable arts, such as mechanical arts, to avoid the temptation of hindsight.
The board has this line of authority. They, in many cases, perhaps not in this one, they refer to it as a simple substitution. Mm-hmm. And have we disapproved that line of authority at the board?
We're not aware of any case law that says a simple substitution by itself without any reason or benefit or incentive to modify is sufficient for...
But have we disapproved that approach?
So a simple substitution without a reason to combine, yeah. not to our knowledge. Okay. I'm eating to my rebuttal time.
So we'll give you 2 minutes.
Okay. Any further questions, Your Honors? All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, Mr. Karsten.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Doug Karsten, and I am arguing on behalf of the appellees today. You'll have your fill of me. I'm arguing all four of them. This is a simple obviousness application of KSR on two separate and independent bases. One, Steenfeld-Jensen, and second, Burroughs. Those are two separate grounds for affirmance. Under KSR, as Judge Toronto noted, there is a teaching suggestion or motivation requirement, and KSR dispatched of a rigid motivation requirement. Here, there's, for Steenfeld-Jensen, an unqualified factual finding supported by substantial evidence that Steenfeld-Jensen teaches the modification at APPX 61 to 62. There's similarly a specific factual finding, also supported by substantial evidence, that Steenfeld-Jensen suggests the modification at APPX 63.
What's the finding about a motivation on Steenfeld-Jensen? Unless I misheard what you just said.
I'm at APPX. Certainly there's a suggestion, an explicit finding at APPX 63 of a suggestion, and also at APPX 70. But I'm reading, we find that one of ordinary skill in the art at APPX 63 would have understood that Steenfeld-Jensen employed this method of description and would have applied embodiments with the same or analogous components, the first, third, fourth, and fifth embodiments.
So would have, that's helpful to you. For what reason?
Well, I think Sanofi recognizes that they're in a bit of a bind here in the sense of the factual findings. And so they're seeking to find some legal argument, some wiggle room.
My question is, and I take it that, my question is, does the board say, did you have evidence saying, here is the benefit a skilled artisan would recognize as desirable to achieve by doing this?
The board didn't say that, Your Honor.
Did your evidence say that?
We did present evidence. I'm not sure it was ever cited in the papers and perhaps not as part of the joint appendix. But for example, in the oral argument at page 92 of the oral hearing transcript, there is reference to some advantages, but I don't think that those advantages are necessary here.
Well, I guess part of what I'm trying to figure out is there are two separate questions. Are there advantages, evidence-supported advantages? If not, is that a problem? So that's the unnecessary. I think I understand the legal argument for why not necessary. I'm trying to focus on whether I need to get to that legal argument, which is not the most self-evident doctrinal proposition in the world.
Understood.
By saying, there is actually evidence of this and or the board found it.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing, no, there isn't.
Well, there isn't a board-specific finding on a benefit. There is a specific board finding. I believe that...
The question is, what evidence did you present about advantage?
We presented in paper 76 of the 1670 IPR in the oral hearing transcript, as well as in the Lansing deposition at pages 220 to 221, advantages such as the ability to lengthen the thread, ability to pick a different material, which would result in easier molding. So we did present evidence of an advantage on the Steenfeld-Jensen flip. The board didn't get to that and didn't need to credit it because, as Your Honor points out, that's the second step, assuming that there's a requirement to show a benefit at all.
Does the joint appendix happen to contain either of the two things you just cited?
Let me check on that, Your Honor, and I will revert, but I don't believe so because they didn't.
The first one is just the lawyers talking at the oral argument?
I'm sorry?
The first one is just the lawyers talking at the oral argument, or was
yes.
it all the oral hearing?
Yes, that's the oral hearing, marshaling the evidence, Your Honor, yes. And the citation there is the thing that we were talking about was a Lansing deposition. That's Mylan's expert's deposition.
Oh, I see. So that just depends on the second thing.
Okay. Right, exactly. So it's the oral hearing transcript in which we're discussing evidence presented by Carl Lansing, Mylan's expert.
And
below.
You said what page of the transcript was that?
220, line 12.
No, that's the deposition transcript. I meant of the oral hearing. Transcript.
Oh, it's paper 76, page 92 of
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you,
Your Honor. And excuse me, but the board considered the so-called disadvantage that Sanofi was able to muster, saying that there was an increased amount of friction, and the board made a specific finding that the person of skill in the art would understand how to offset.
I mean, this is about Burroughs now you're talking about?
This is Steinfeld.
No, this is Steinfeld-Jensen, Your Honor.
Steinfeld-Jensen, yeah.
Yes. And would understand how to offset that additional friction. And so
Steinfeld-Jensen, in suggesting this alternative, didn't say that it increased friction, right?
No, they didn't, Your Honor. There was no evidence of record in the prior art that it would be a disadvantage whatsoever. It's a suggestion. And KSR in the alternative says teaching, suggestion, or motivation. What Sanofi is trying to do here is to put some teeth into motivation or into some would-could analysis such that it actually undermines a finding of suggestion as a grounds for obviousness. And that goes directly against and essentially declares war on KSR. It certainly would require this court to somehow disavow significant portions of KSR, which it has never done before.
This evidence that you pointed to referencing benefits in the discussion we're having about Steinfeld-Jensen, is that equally applicable in the Burroughs situation?
Well, Your Honor, there was evidence presented in response to what Sanofi considered would be a disadvantage, widening the pen, and the panel below made a factual...
People like a wide pen.
Made a factual finding based upon crediting evidence that some users may actually find desirable and consider an advantage a wider pen. So that the friction issue did not come up, is my recollection, in connection with the Burroughs reference. But that was a plain swap. I mean, that's... You know,
right, but my point is, unless I've mistaken what's going on here, Sanofi has to prove to us that the board was wrong both as to Steinfeld-Jensen and as to Burroughs.
Right.
And if we find that Sanofi-Jensen maybe is a little itchy, but we find Burroughs is not, then the result's the same, correct?
Exactly right, Your Honor. Now, in all candor, in my heart of hearts, I believe that both are not iffy, that both are absolutely single reference obvious.
Right,
solid.
But I mean, in terms of the evidence, I mean, from Judge Toronto had been pointing out, and I think we've come to agree that on Steinfeld-Jensen decision written by the board, there's no evidence in the board opinion that it was looking at benefits.
That's
whereas,
exactly right.
Whereas, I mean, if that is of concern to us, I would think you have a potentially stronger case on Burroughs.
If that's a concern,
but,
Your Honor.
Yeah, but, I mean, but that obviously is a concern, or we wouldn't all be talking about it.
Fair point, Your Honor. I appreciate that. Having said that, though, there's nothing in KSR that says that there has to be a benefit where there's an express suggestion, and I'm unaware of any case that has made such a finding by this court or the Supreme Court. And so I believe it would be an extension of the law and a change in the law materially to say that there has to be some benefit, particularly here where there's nothing in the prior art specifically that would caution against. You know, there is case law that talks about teaching away, and there's nothing here in this matter that talks at all about discouraging or discrediting somebody from doing this modification in Steinfeld-Jensen. In fact, Dr. Slocum, Sanofi's own expert, talked about or admitted to the similarities. And there's a factual finding on this at APPX 63 between the first and fifth embodiments. And there's a specific finding that those passages of Steinfeld-Jensen directly apply to the fifth embodiment. You know, this really does come down in both instances, both Steinfeld-Jensen and Burroughs, to familiar evidence, familiar elements, known methods, predictable results. There's nothing in that KSR framework. And sometimes that's referred to as known interchangeability. Sometimes it's called a simple swap. But that's really the heart of the sort of obvious classic example. And that's exactly what we have here in two separate bases, both of which are independent grounds for affirmance. I recognize, you know, unless the panel has any questions, I recognize I have 5 minutes on the clock here, but unless the panel has any questions, I think I've addressed everything that certainly Mr. Ensley raised. But if anything's bothering the court, I'm happy to field questions.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Ensley, about 2 minutes.
Hello again, Your Honors. to address some of the points that my colleague, Mr. Karsten, made, is that the board did actually, in both for the Steenfeld-Jensen ground and the Burroughs ground, examine any detriments against any alleged benefits. And for the Steenfeld-Jensen ground, it only found, made a finding that it would result in a worse pen, a pen injector that had higher injection force. As for the Burroughs ground, the board did acknowledge that there were potential drawbacks with no benefits that would support the reason for the modification. Again, the board only focused on interchangeability as being the sole reason for the modification. And in all the cases cited by Appellee in the blue brief for the support that interchangeability can support a motivation to modify, in all those cases, there was a reason in addition to the interchangeability that was put forth as supporting the combination. And again, I just want to reiterate that this court is held that under KSR, it remains necessary to identify some reason that would have led opposer to modify the prior art. So you have to have a reason.
Okay,
so
can I just ask, you don't read the board's discussion. Now I don't remember whether it's Burroughs or Steenfeld-Jensen, where the board says, yeah, there'd be some greater friction, but person of skill in the art would know what to do about that. Yeah, as a result of that, you'd have a fatter pen, but some people like fatter pens. Is that not an advantage? Namely, for those people who like fat pens, this result actually offers an advantage.
Well, no one has ever contended, not in the petition nor in the board's decision, that a wider pen was a benefit that would motivate someone to add a pair of threads to the dial mechanism. The board and Mylan both relied on interchangeability. And the last thing I would say is that, Your Honors, with respect to Steenfeld-Jensen, it wouldn't be obvious to make a pen injector worse for no reason other than the fact that you could. And that's what we feel the board's decision came down to. I see my time is up.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Your Honors.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.